With that, we'll start the round of questions. I anticipate we'll have a second round and a third round if necessary. I'm going to yield my first 5 minutes to Representative Capito to start the questioning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank all of you. I would like to, before I begin my questioning, add to the record recommendations to incorporate public health components by Dr. Gupta, who is the Charleston Kanawha Health Department health officer.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you. The big question I hear, Mr. McIntyre, and it's very simple. You said safety is your first number one priority. Is the water safe to drink?
As a water company, we don't set the safe standards, but we are in compliance with all the standards set by the health-based agencies like the CDC, the West Virginia Bureau of Public Health, and we have been since the 13th of January. Yet I recognize the customer's fear associated with the smell of something in their water. So as a water purveyor, we continue to work until the smell is eradicated from the system.
Well, thank you for that answer. I'd still like to hear it safe, and I think that's what everybody wants, that one word. Dr. Tierney, is the water safe to drink?
I think it's on.
It is now. I had turned it off. I'm sorry. That's, in a way, a difficult thing to say because everybody has a different definition of safe. As I used the example before, some people think it's safe to jump off the bridge on Bridge Day. I don't personally think that's safe. So everybody has a different definition. Am I confident in the science? I'm as confident as I can be, given what we had. I believe the water, based on the standards we have, is usable for every purpose, and that includes drinking, bathing, and cooking.
So I guess the frustration I'm feeling is that we can't come to that specific term where everybody could have the assurance. I will note, right, you do have a giant thing of water in front of you, so yeah. I'm assuming you're drinking that.
I am, and I'm sorry, that's not meant to be a statement, but it is from my home tap and my home ice cube, and I have been drinking it. Didn't think about that, but yes.
Let me ask you this, Mr. McIntyre. This is something that you and I actually talked about this on the day I came out there. There was never any communication or any reporting to you on your as the purveyor of potable water in the area, what's upstream from you. So you never knew or had any knowledge that, I mean, you knew Freedom Industries was up there, but didn't have any, there's no requirement to have communication as to what's there and how you could have had a quicker response to this maybe.
Well, I think the last part, let me address that first, because we had enough time and information to know that there was a spill and to respond. The information that would have been useful to us on what products are up there are really the aftermath and dealing with the customer and the residents' fear of the water, because it has this odor to it, and even its MSDS sheet doesn't really refer much to its odorous nature in a drinking water system. But we had enough time to augment our treatment plant, and we were treating this material clearly until after 4 o'clock.
But the testing protocols weren't really in place, though, for at least 24 hours. I remember you working with the guard to try to figure out how to detect for this. Wouldn't it have been useful to have all of this sort of, you could have pulled it up on your commuter, we can test right away, we know what we're looking for, we know how to prevent, to provide a quicker response?
Well, again, I challenge the quicker response part. I think having more information on all products above a water treatment plant is extremely helpful, extremely helpful. But we had enough information. We augmented the treatment plant, and we followed the standard protocols. A do not use is a protocol that the West Virginia Bureau of Public Health has in place for these situations. And I've said publicly, if we knew again what we know now about the materials and we had this same issue presented to us, we would have made the same decision to continue running the treatment plant and put a do not use order. It's really having information after that would have been really helpful to help people understand the nature, the health hazards, the risks associated with this product, or apparently the lack of any of those health hazards.
All right, Mr. Petrie, thank you for your all's response in the emergency way and the way you were able to disseminate water, both of you and the other emergency responders. You have had a lot of interaction with FEMA. We have here in Kanawha County and across the state. Would you say that the response with FEMA in terms of helping you deliver was satisfactory, or would you have any suggestions for them?
Well, we keep telling people to be prepared for 72 hours at home just in case a major emergency happens. Once in that incident occurs, they have to stand up their own response and send us the resources that we request through the state. And FEMA did, in fact, send us a lot of water that we needed. You know, it's obvious that it don't get here quick enough for us.
Right.
But they have procedures I'm sure they have to go through, and we take it upon ourselves to use our local resources until they get here. But, of course, I would like to see a quicker response.
Okay, thank you. I have 20. Oh, I have no more seconds. All right.
Thank you. We'll do a second round. And with that, Mr. Rahal is recommended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gordon, let me begin asking you a couple of questions. You stated in your testimony that during the first 24 hours, you had difficulty communicating with American Water. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Did it improve after a time period? Did your communication improve?
No, sir. I never did get through to them. I never got an answer. I left messages and never did get a return phone call.
From where were you getting your information then?
From Jimmy.
From Homeland Security. Okay. I think a lot of people were doing that. Let me ask, have you documented, Gordon, the final cost to the County of Cabell?
When we were in the very beginning, we spent around $2,000 for water and hand sanitizer. One of the things that we tell the people in the community to be ready for 48, 72 hours. Government, local government, is going to have to step up and also be ready in that same time period. Without the Huntington Area Food Bank, there wouldn't have been water in the town of Clodin.
Okay. Mr. McIntyre, let me ask you about the school situation. Here, a full month after the incident started, there have been reports of fumes in the schools. Are you helping? What are those fumes coming from, first of all?
I don't know, sir. I can't answer that question. The National Guard has been the agency that's been actively involved in sampling the schools, and all I can tell you is the sample results that I've seen before and after these events are at non-detect levels, but I can't speak to those events. I don't have any direct knowledge.
Does anybody on the panel have knowledge of the fumes in the schools, Jimmy?
Yes, Congressman. We've put together some National Guard and Bureau of Public Health and DEP strike teams that have responded to these calls from the schools concerning the fumes. As Mr. McIntyre said, we have gone in and tested the water immediately going into the schools, and then they're doing tests afterwards. But all the water, before any flushing or anything else was done, came back at a non-detect level. There have been some issues with the schools, with their in the cafeterias, with their dishwashers, when the water has been heated up, that the odor seems to be greater at that point. But that's the only thing we've really seen as a potential cause.
Have you been assisting them in their flushing efforts?
The guard has. The schools have. Schools are a little bit more complex than the average home to flush in that a lot of the particularly newer schools have automated systems that control the flow of water, just like the faucets that you have to put your hands under to make runs. So you can't just go in and turn a faucet on and let it flush. So they're a little bit more complicated. But the school systems have brought plumbers in, and they flushed their buildings. And in cases where we've had the thresholds above the 10 parts per billion, they've gone in and reflushed. And all the schools are at less than the 10 parts per billion at this point.
What about individual homes that want to be tested? I know you just can't go around testing everybody's home. What's the process they go through?
Well, some individuals are doing private testing with, you know, they're on their own. The governor's office and the Bureau of Public Health are working on a plan. As you all know, this is not a very simple issue. It's a very complex issue, particularly when you start looking at going into homes. So we want to make sure, and the governor wants to make sure, whatever we do is very thoughtful and well laid out so that when we do something, it's something we can replicate down the road.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. That Mr. Webster is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple questions. Is there any evidence that the chemical residue could adhere itself to iron pipes, copper pipes? Anyone know the answer to that?
It's a good question, and we've been looking at it. It relates to a chemical's water partition coefficient. It's a factor in science called a KOW, and it's a complex calculation based on the particular substance or chemical that's involved. We do know that if a KOW is high, it tends to be more sticky to substances. And if a KOW is low, it tends to be less likely to be sticky to substances. And fortunately, the MCHM has a low partition coefficient, and so we don't anticipate that it's going to be. The EPA is looking at it right now to make sure that the chemical doesn't have any unique characteristics which would cause it to act different than we expect. But the fact that when we have had consistently lower levels with the testing tends to suggest it's acting like we would expect it to act with that partition coefficient, but we don't have an official answer from the EPA yet.
Is there a protocol for a residence or a build or a commercial building on what to do to flush before you begin using it, like to flush out the water that maybe sat there for a couple of days? Is there any protocol for that or a checklist of some sort?
Yes, sir. Working with the different health agencies, we created a flushing protocol for customers. But it's important to remind everyone that that protocol was based on helping homes ensure that they could get below the one part per million health protective limit. We were very clear at the time that we advised people to follow the flushing protocol, which our customer service center, if people call, if they haven't flushed, I'd certainly advise them to flush. We hear a number of customers haven't. We have staff that can walk them through that process on the phone. It's on our website. It's a printed three-page brochure. There's essentially three basic steps to the flushing. You flush the hot water for 15 minutes, then the cold water for 15 minutes, then outside taps for 15 minutes, and then you move to what we'd consider cleansing, which is changing any filters on your ice maker, dealing with automatic ice makers and that. So, again, that was to get below the protective health limit. And that's been very effective when used and followed. We also advise people, though, at that time, that that was not to eliminate the odor, that the protective health limit was set by the CDC, and below that number, people would still be able to smell this product in their water. So that's the next phase that we moved into in the flushing and the non-detect, and we continue to work to eradicate it so that no people can smell it in their water. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And that, Senator Manchin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, it's just unconscionable that Freedom Industry could not have known about the leak, did not report the leak, and did not know how much the leak had happened. It's unconscionable to me to believe that. So I'm sure the action will be taken to responsible parties there, and the answers we got afterwards were absolutely unacceptable. And with that being said, I understand. My outrage and everybody else's outrage should be that of any unconscionable company out there doing that type of business. With that being said, Dr. Rosso, you with your impressive background, is the water safe? Would you drink the water and use the water with your children and grandchildren? If it's not safe, and you can't say that, what do you want to see testing before you would consider it to be safe, if you could answer?
Well, what I will say is that the value that we, that was the trigger, the sampling and the trigger, the stop of the use of the water, is what is called a screening level, is what the CDC say. That is not, the screening level is not necessarily a level that protects public health.
But do you consider it to be safe?
Well, I consider that the toxicology that exists in this chemical is so little and so the chemical is so little studied that it's very hard to say what is the safe level. What we should be looking at is what are the levels of detection that we have and try to use the water as it's happening here when they are below those levels of detection. But I will look better to the level of detections that this screening level that was reported first.
Nobody's going to say it's safe. That's what I'm hearing from everybody here. And that's the confusion that we have right now. With that being said, Mr. McIntyre, if you could tell me, there was no backup. You had single source intake. Do you have any other of your plants around the country that you provide water to that only have single source intake and no backup system that you can't shut down the intake? Is anyone else as vulnerable as we are?
I can tell you, Senator, that many water treatment plants around the country have a single intake for their water treatment plant.
With that type of chemicals right next door?
It depends on where they're located as to what they have, but there's major river basins.
So you're saying, and how about backup? You're saying the rest of your systems have no backup?
I'm not saying the rest of the systems. I don't know that. We can get you that answer, sir.
Could you give us that information, please, sir, for the record? Because I like to know. I can't imagine why we wouldn't have shut it down. It's just common sense. You shut down the system, but then you told me about the way it should have been done because of the public safety and this and that. And I just can't imagine that we couldn't have shut that down, had the backup system, until we could have determined it. And I know the timing, they didn't let you know, and all this going on, but this makes no sense. And if I could go right quickly to Mr. Jeanette and Dr. Tierney, have you evaluated the other areas in West Virginia that people might be with their intake systems where the water treatment plants that could be vulnerable right now, and have you taken any actions?
Yes, sir. I can tell you what we have done. We have began the process of mapping all the water intakes across the state and looking at the locations.
Have we identified basically and notified anybody they could be of in harm's way?
Not at this point. We're still trying
still to evaluate it, Dr. Tierney?
We have maps. They need to be updated, but we don't have any authority to do something. We're
so
working
on
that with the legislation.
The legislation right now, I'm understanding EPA does not have the backing of any codification of any law that allows you to go and do anything that's of a non-hazmat. Is that correct?
EPA, but
Mike, I'm sorry, Mr. Dorsey.
Sorry, Senator, well, the EPA, but that's correct, at least from the state
agencies. You're saying, why didn't you do this? Why wouldn't you have already been doing this? Why did you why did we have a horrific situation like this? And you follow me, people are starting to blame everybody. But
sure.
Tell me why the DEP would not have been able to do what needed to be done.
Well, the laws that we do have aren't designed to do what you're suggesting there, Senator. We can look at people's stormwater. We can look at any specific outfalls that they have, but we do not have the statutory or rule authority to go up and say, okay, I'm going to do a survey upstream here.
Have you looked at the legislation that we have provided from the legislation I introduced on the Senate side, and I'm sure what our colleagues are introducing on the House side, to see if that would give you the adequate...
Yes, sir, that's a big help.
Doctor?
You know, part of our lines of inquiry on our investigation are towards prevention, and it's good that we are looking at the waterworks and where the water is coming, but also in our lines of inquiry, we are focusing on the siting of chemical storage tanks. And we believe that it's a very important issue. It's an issue that entering what I define as inherently safe actions is we have to be clear after a mapping is done of the facilities for water, what are the chemical storage that are nearby and why do they need to be there if there are hazardous substance? And that will be an important step to take.
Got you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll do another one. You have more questions. My first question is follow up with Representative Capito and Senator Manchin ask. The panel sitting here, nobody's willing to say that the water is safe, categorically say it's safe. I'm not going to ask you again because I think everybody's going to dance around the question. And I don't know exactly why, but I suspect the main reason why is everybody's afraid they're going to get sued if something happens, you know, weeks from now, and something enters the water, somebody's going to bring a lawsuit against somebody. So that's troubling to me that in our society, when we've got the people that are supposed to protect us and the experts, nobody's willing to say it because they're afraid of a lawsuit. So that's a different topic for today, but it's, you know, about tort reform and making sure that our experts, that the people that are protecting society, are able to step up and say, with our technology today, we ought to be able to say the water's safe. And so I understand why you're hedging. Communications in this case, first let me go to, you talked about, Senator Manchin asked why you didn't shut down. Could you explain again why you didn't shut down the system?
Yes.
I think you talked about it in your
Certainly, thank you. And it's the number one question that we keep getting asked as the water purveyor is, and people believe that you can just physically turn off and turn on a water plant. Unfortunately, that's not the reality. And it's a system that was severely stressed with the polar vortex temperatures that we had, and then the thaw that occurred after that. We had numerous pipe breaks. People were turning their water on to let it run so that their taps wouldn't freeze. We encourage that so they don't have a costly service line repair or replacement. But our system on January 9th would not support any length of shutdown. In fact, if we had shut down the facility, we would have been out of water in areas within 15 minutes to 2 hours. That aside, we provide a critical service to the community, and I'd like people to try to envision what it would be like to be in a community where there is no water in the pipes and you have no sanitation. Where do you go to the bathroom? Hospitals. If there's a fire in the hospital, how do you protect those patients? There's no sprinkler systems in buildings. It's a downtown area. What if someone started a fire? How do you address that? Those were all critical thought processes that we had to go through. And to extend, you can't just turn it back on. Once you waited, and we are 4 to 5 days before the river water, so when people talk about storage, I don't believe storage would have helped, because you have to get the plant back on, then you have to get it running. Now you have to introduce that water very carefully into a system that's full of air. And if you've ever seen your tap at home with air in it in the bathroom, when you turn it on, that explosive nature, there would have been pipe breaks all over the system that would have had to been fixed and then remedied and then boil waters and move out and out and out. Conservatively, we believe that it would have been more than a month to turn the water system back on for all customers. We believe we made the right decision to protect this community.
A whole other health hazard is what you're bringing up if you would to shut that system down potentially. So, but the staff turned the clock on for me. I need the discipline of the clock also. Communication. I think communication is absolutely critical in these events. And I want to start first with Mr. Mary and Mr. Petri on the communication. You had said you weren't able to communicate with the water company, but the federal, the state, how is that communication? How did that work for you?
I had very good communications with the Office of Emergency Service. I had no problems, never had one issue.
I, too, had good communications with the State Office of Emergency Services, but we've been in these situations before with our chemical facilities in the area, and we found out that it was better off if we had somebody at the site, and we had my deputy to go to the meetings and be a part of the committee that was at the water company, along with all the other people from the National Guard and the other agencies.
And how did the information from the CDC flow down? Did it go through the state to you folks, or did you directly?
Chairman Chester, if I might.
Yes.
The issue of communications is an important one, and it talks about your original question and say, there is the appearance that people is hedging when they say, you know, what is the same level? It is the same level. But if you are going to give a scientific answer to this, you have to have scientific data in which you can base your statement of the safety. And in this particular chemical, there are only two toxicological studies that were ever made. You know, one is a acute single dose mortality study, and the other was a daily oral study where, you know, four groups of animals in each. I mean, this is the very minimum that you do.
Right.
And those type of studies are not designed to give us the answer of what is safe. That's what one of the things that we are also contemplating in our investigation of this case is to look, as Senator mentioned, is doing, to look at the Toxic Substance Control Act and see why the people that basically put these chemicals in commerce don't provide the necessary toxicological data to tell us what is the levels of toxicity that we should worry about. And that remains to be done.
And Mr. McIntyre, Mr. Murray said he was unable to communicate with you folks. Can you talk a little bit about what was going on over there? Was there a reason that you didn't communicate with him, or just, can you talk a little bit about the communication?
To be honest, I didn't know he was trying to communicate with us. I did not receive any calls. I'm not sure who he was calling, but we had a whole interagency team at the water treatment plant running day and night. So I can't speak to who he called, but I find it very unfortunate because I believe we've been extremely communicative with all the partners through this process. A lot of communications have been happening. I don't know where this one, you know, fell apart.
Okay. And in a situation like this, you know, unfortunately, that happens now and then. But, again, communications, that's something we need to learn from this, you know, from the federal level all the way down. And I think the folks that, you know, where the rubber meets the road, you guys that are county emergency responders, you need to have that communication all the way up the chain. And final question, Mr. Jeanette, you mentioned about learning from other sites that are similar to West Virginia. Have you identified other places that are similar that, you know, as the committee goes forward, as we look at potential legislation, that we can look and say, well, this is a very similar situation that occurred in this state or that state?
What I meant to say in that is people need to learn from what we're doing here. And we need to look at being able to replicate and learn from the mistakes that we made, the things that we did right, and push that model all across the country. And we're currently talking to FEMA and DHS about developing some things. As you know, there's some national security implications to this that need to be discussed in another forum.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. With that, I'm going to go through a second round of questions. Mr. Rahal, do you want to?
Yeah. Mr. Dorsey, let me ask you about the restoration of the site.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned, I think, somewhere in the press that it's been stalled because of the various investigations, including criminal investigation going on. Has that restoration been restarted, or is it still
on hold? Congressman Rahal, we have never really stopped. I mean, we've been actively managing the site. But the area where the leak actually occurred is in the tank farm on top of the bench there. And the area where the leak occurred has been sort of off limits. We put sumps in there, and we put some interceptor trenches, et cetera, to collect the raw material that was coming out. And that has stopped. But it would surprise me if we didn't, when we move these tanks, find additional pools of the material below that. Now, that's not to say it's going to get off-site. And Mr. McIntyre has stated that the water has been clean since January 13th. I believe the intake side of that's been clean since January 11th. So we've been very successful in keeping the stuff on the site. But the Chemical Safety Board is up there investigating, the federal prosecutor is investigating. There are several up there. And until they get the clearance, and I'm hoping that's this week, we haven't been able to move those tanks and see what we have right below them.
Yes.
We, in our preliminary work that we have done, we have been able to examine the bottom of the tank, and I will ask our lead investigator, Mr. Banks, if he could show to you the photographs that we have of the actual failure of the bottom of the tank that do the things. I think we have it over here.
You mentioned Mr. Banks. Met with him on his first day he was in the state.
The
and he's no stranger to our state either, having been here with your board on previous accidents.
Well, as you can see here, there's two holes that we photographed in the tank. One's about 19 centimeters, one's about 10 centimeters. And this is the object of our attempts to get this portion of the tank extracted and removed for forensic examination. We're at the working with our federal partners in the U.S. Attorney's Office and the state to make sure that everybody understands that there's a protocol we've developed. We're working with a preeminent tank expert to make sure that these portions of the tank are removed in a prescribed manner. And I think we're close to doing that. The plaintiff's attorneys were out at the site this past Friday, and we're hoping to strike an arrangement where we can remove this, and once we remove this, the remediation can move pace. This is the main area, but we want to make sure that we thoroughly document those other tanks that were also in similar service to determine if there was some failure mechanisms in those tanks that could tell us why the tanks failed.
Steel?
We think that it's a carbon steel, but we would want to determine that after any pronouncements of that.
Yeah, I would like to add that one of our lines of investigation also is to look at corrosion mechanisms. We're going to take samples of that tank and find out how the corrosion happened and to try to make recommendations of what materials should be recommended to build these tanks. There are material, there are alloys that are especially protective towards corrosion that we would like to recommend at the end.
How long do you expect this process to take?
The actual removing of the sample, which is called a coupon, could be a day, but it's a matter of getting all of the other tanks mapped, and I think that could take maybe 2 to 3 days. We have an expert that's recommended a company that can come in and do the work.
Okay. I know we've discussed this before, and it's been mentioned in today's testimony. Your recommendations from the last time you were in West Virginia, 3 years ago roughly, were not acted upon. I know those recommendations have been incorporated in various pieces of legislation. My colleagues have introduced recommendations that I fully support and hope to see them acted upon this time. Would you anticipate that that will be a basis upon which your recommendations will be based after this report is complete? Will you re-ask that those recommendations be made again?
Well, I think we have a third opportunity to present the necessity of having that type of chemical spill protection, chemical release protection that is the basis of our past two recommendations. And this, of course, is a case that definitely this applies to have a system to address and prevent chemical spills.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Capito?
Thank you. Dr. Tierney, I'd like to talk about the public health effects of what's going on here. First of all, just very briefly, if you could give me a snapshot of what you've seen. Is it rashes or is it growing? Is it how many approximately? The other question I have is on the ruling or the letter from the CDC about pregnant women. I mean, everybody that I talked to said, of course, that was startled. I mean, really shook us. Young families have babies. They have formula they're making with the water. Why just pregnant women? What kind of judgment was made on that? And then maybe just briefly a little bit about what long-term lookout you would predict on this, on the public health aspect.
I'm sorry, what was the
first one was what in a real snapshot as to what you've seen.
Oh, this what we've seen.
Yeah.
Very fortunately, in our survey of the hospitals, emergency rooms, that it's been less than 0.5% of the affected population presented, which,
right.
Thank God. We've seen mostly nausea and vomiting, which was self-limited.
Is that from the odor or from drinking?
All of the above.
Okay.
Some rashes. Also, which resolved. So, like I said, thank God. We don't want anybody harmed from this.
And then the letter from the CDC.
Now, the letter from the CDC, I can tell you we were equally shocked, surprised, and worried when we got it. We kept pressing them for more clarification, and you see, the letter is what it is.
Right.
I will tell you, I personally... on Saturday, which would have been 9/10/11, when we were discussing the screening level that they gave me, I, being a doctor, specifically asked, what about babies? What about breastfeeding? What about immunocompromised? What about pregnant women? What about... And they told me that they felt that the screening level, because of the safety factors that they factored into it, were protective of those populations. So we were shocked also when they presented us with this.
And the last thing is, have you even gotten to any kind of strategy for some sort of long-term?
We're in the process of that. And like I said, it's not something we want to get wrong. So we want to make sure it's a reasoned approach. We're starting with our surveillance, looking back at it, and then we're going to do a CASPER study, which is a household study through the CDC. Mm-hmm. We're going to take that information, and then we're going to figure out what is going to give us the best information.
Okay. All right. Mr. Dorsey, there was a report early on that the tanks had never been inspected, and then, as Senator Manchin said, everybody was getting blamed for this. What I'm hearing you say is that was not part of your legal authority to, am I correct in that?
That's correct, Congressman Capito. Nothing that we would have done in our legal authority as inspectors for the laws that are applicable up there would have detected that leak.
Had you had inspectors on the site at all previously?
Yes, there have been inspectors on site numerous times over the years. Our secretary reported initially that in the heat of the moment when this thing first happened that they hadn't, but that was not the case. Now, I can't tell you how many times they've been on there, but it was probably over a dozen for air complaints and other inspections up there.
Okay, but your real job there was not to inspect the safety of the tank. It was respond to complaints and odor complaints and such. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes, ma'am.
Okay. You know, there's another myth around concern with the flushing issue in that everybody seems to be smelling it the most with the hot water. And I can attest to that. In the shower, I can smell it, although I didn't this morning, I was happy to report. But brushing my teeth with the cold, I didn't smell it. So is there some characteristic here with hot? Is it because it could, I mean, we're talking about sediments in our hot water tanks, and help us out with this kind of, we're talking about it a lot.
Yeah, and it is well known in the water industry that chemicals that have an odor to them, like geosmin or MIB, which are associated with the much cleaner water what we have in the Great Lakes, decades ago, water treatment plants started seeing odors in their water, and that's why many of them have switched to the type of process that we have with carbon caps, activated carbon caps on their treatment system. It's to deal with these odors. And they are more prominent in hot water. I think it's mostly in the shower, and it's because you're making it into more of a mist, and it has temperature. It's just like anything you cook. It smells more when it's hot than when it's cold.
So that's not an unexpected result, that with the hot water you would smell it more prominently.
I would expect it fully.
Okay. All right. Dr. Moria Rosso, you mentioned in your testimony that a private inspector had been to the site to inspect the tanks in October of 2013. Now, I don't know what reason they had a contractor coming in, and since they're not here, we cannot ask them that question. But I'm going to surmise, since it was sold at the end of the year, that might have been one of the provisos of change of ownership. I don't know that to be a fact, but that's kind of what hit me. You mentioned in there, in your report, that you say that the tank, and then, quote, had been maintained to some structural adequacy, but not necessarily full compliance of API 653 or EPA standards. Can you give us some detail on that? What does that mean? It was corroding, or it was...
Let me answer first, and then I pass you to Mr. Banks. First of all, you know, they did inspect... In October of 2003, the chemical tanks terminals in Charleston and Nitro, but they didn't address the tank that leaked, 396.
Oh, the specific tank was not.
It wasn't addressed because it didn't contain any hazardous substance as legally defined.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I wonder if you would like to ask details of API 653.
Well, there's a pretty rigorous standard that 653 would hold the tanks to. If they were used in a certain service.
If it was toxic, is that what you...
Yes, if it was toxic. And because this material is not considered toxic, it received a waiver for that type of scrutiny.
I see.
And so moving forward, we're going to look at the use 653 as the standard for evaluating this tank to make sure that if there were some failure modes, we'll be able to determine that using that process.
Thank you. I just finally would say that... this toxicity standard, we all realize that something that's non-toxic can bring you right to your knees. And I think that's probably what TSCA reform is all about. And I look forward to working on that. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I recognize Senator Manchin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this would be Mr. Dorsey. Is this on? I think this would be Mr. Dorsey. You know, the credibility of Freedom, there is no credibility. They said, first we thought it was a small leak, then it was like 3,000. I've heard three different things, 3,000, 5,000, 7,500. Do we know how much actually leaked in the river?
No, sir. I stopped reporting how much they were telling me was leaked after I got three different numbers.
Why should we be relying on them for any information?
Well, I'm relying on the Chemical Safety Board. When the Chemical Safety Board tells me how much they think was leaked, that's what I'm going to believe.
Okay. Next of all, was there no plan? I mean, why, when we knew there was a leak, why wouldn't we have emptied those tanks immediately? before more leaked out? Why?
We did. By the time I got there, they had a tanker hooked to that tank and were pumping the material out. It just takes X amount of time for, depending on how much was in there, to get it empty to where no more will come out.
You know, if we're briefed, all of us are briefed on a regular basis about cybersecurity and how vulnerable our food supply, our water supply, our grid system, and what it can do to our lives in America. Seeing this as a wake-up call, do you think that this should be considered the same as a national disaster? A comparison would be this way, and Doctor, whoever wants to chime in on this, the same as Hurricane Sandy. There's no state that can take care of this by themselves, and they're expecting the state, but we shouldn't be looking at how much it costs and whether we can do the testing and whether we should, who's responsible. It just has to be done. But so, Doctor, we're going to need people like yourself that'll speak up and say, this is a wake-up call to prevent a national disaster, and can we expect some help from the federal government?
Yes, I think a long way to deal with this is the bill that you are proposing in the Senate. You know, but what we have to see here is what is the cost of not acting? I mean, we are able to measure what has cost to the state of West Virginia to have this incident in terms of money lost and income lost and anguish to the people. To address the storage of chemicals in tanks will be a small cost compared with the other costs.
You agree that we should have long-term monitoring in the valley here for the people in the affected areas so that we know the effect that this has on humans or no effect at all on humans?
Exactly. I think the Toxic Substance Control Act should address the toxicology of chemicals.
We should be expecting the federal government to work with us on that.
And that is the federal government, yes.
I do, too. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one.
I want to chime in, yes.
Now, and I know, Dr. Tierney, I know you're new to the job. I know, and you're on the front line of defense right now. But with that being said, I've got to say a few things here. Your analogy of being safe, and I know, no one, I'm understanding that not one of you up here are willing to say unequivocally it's safe, and I would assume that you'd have to have zero parts per billion, trillion, no, nothing, for you to use the word safe. I think that's where everybody is probably. I'm using it normally. A lot of us are using it normally. I don't think my water needs to be tested in my home. But if I had a young family, I think that that'd be a different scenario. So we're all in agreement. I would just say this about your analogy on the bridge. I've been to Bridge Day many times. I did not think it was safe. I think there's people that wanted to throw me off at times, but I didn't think that I would do it voluntarily. And with that being said, you understand they all sign a waiver. They sign a waiver of the danger to hold nobody responsible. We shouldn't have to sign a waiver to drink our water.
No, and I agree.
I just,
as a doctor, cannot countenance jumping off a bridge.
Let me ask any of you, as we're starting to wrap this up, does the state right now, I would assume that they're looking at all types of testing, whoever would want a test, I'm sure of that, and I'm very appreciative of that. And long-term, you're all receptive to long-term monitoring, and Dr. Gupta basically has been on the front line, and I think we have a lot of confidence. And I think everybody should be working together. If you'd want to comment on that, and then if anybody wants to comment on something that you think would give the people in this valley some confidence that we are moving in the right direction, that anything and everything possibly can be done is being done. So, Doctor?
I agree. We are going to need help from our federal partners to establish these things. They're not done easily or inexpensively.
You all are accepting the testing and you all are accepting
Absolutely.
The monitoring also?
Absolutely. I think all of this, needs to be done to restore confidence.
Jeff, do you have anything on your situation that you said? Do you have any plans on putting another intake? Do you have any plans on basically a backup system?
Senator, we have to look at all options following this event. We've still been dealing with this as an event, working through it, and there will be a time that we go through that. I think it's well known now that when that plant was constructed some 40 years ago, there was an application for a second intake that was not approved.
So, Jeff, I would say this, that everyone's upset about their water bill. You know that, right?
I know they are.
Can you at least give us a break?
Senator, it's a great question, but, our customers continue to use the water, whether they think it's appropriate.
Most of it's been used for flushing and everything else. Their water bills are all spiked higher than they've ever been, and they haven't been able to use it.
Well, a number of people have let their water run to protect it from freezing. We know that. We see that. We've given credits to small business and residential customers based on what was needed to be done in their homes, and it exceeds that amount, what they needed to do to have the water below the 1 ppm. And I can tell you, Senator, like you, you were at the plant. You drank the same finished water I drank that day. I've been drinking it since the order was lifted. My wife does. As a water company...
How are you sleeping?
I'm sleeping great. We have to follow what's given to us as health-based guidance. And that treatment plant, everything we do, we monitor for 100 contaminants at various times throughout the year. We monitor for mercury. We monitor for arsenic. We monitor for pesticides. And if anyone thinks that every water treatment system has absolutely zero of all of these chemicals or compounds, they're mistaken. There are limits set. And as a water purveyor, we work within those limits. So that's the hesitation we have, because we only do what we're instructed to do as making water available to our customers. And again, through this whole event, through all of the sampling, there's less than 10 results that I'm aware of that were above 1 ppm. But it is a fear-based issue because people can smell it, and we recognize it. And that's what we're working to, eliminate that fear.
Thank you.
I'm given to let everybody know it's not standard operating procedure in a hearing like this, but I think because of the situation and talking to Mr. Rahal and Ms. Capito, to allow the public, if they want to make a comment, what we'll do is you can submit anything. The public can submit anything they want for the record. We'll take it. It's open for 30 days as requested by Mr. Rahal. I'm going to ask a final couple of questions. And if you wish to ask, we'll take 10 statements from the audience, let you talk for 1 minute. But if you care, if someone in the public wants to, you line up over there. We'll have a microphone. But I guess we'll take 10 folks. If you want to say something, we'll give you 1 minute to state. And then, of course, you can submit all you want for the record. But I have a couple questions here. First question is, when the facility operator discloses that there are chemicals present at a facility, and that under the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act, that's the law, how is the information utilized when you have that information to prepare for and help prevent possible incidents? And I'd like to, you folks from the county, if you could respond to that, how do you utilize that information?
Well, when we receive a call of some type of leak or some type of odor complaint that we get quite often, we respond with our fire departments. My fire coordinator responds. Once we've determined where the smell or the origination of the leak may have happened, we do compile a list of all of the Tier 2 reports that we have on file. Our KPPC, which is our LEPC in the county or local planning committee, they, as well as the state, has a list of the chemicals that are stored at that facility. And as far as I know, the local responding fire department is supposed to have that information within their office also. So we try to get all the information that we have and take it with us to that area, so we'll know as much about it as we can, so that we can, A, not put our people in harm's way, and then, B, let the people in the area know if there's something they need to worry about.
Mr. Mary, similar?
Agreed 100%. It's under SAR Title III. They must report to the local volunteer fire departments or fire departments, and also submit the Tier 2 reporting to the local LEPC.
And your first responders, do they get out to these sites? You know, the priority sites that are out there, do they get out and visit them? Are they familiar with them?
We don't have as many sites as Kanawha County. Right. Fortunately, we don't.
Well, our volunteer departments do, as well as our professional fire departments, do pre-planning. So they do try to get out in the areas trying to see what they have to protect and protect us from. So I would say, yes, they do probably get out. Do they know right now how many and what all the different types of chemicals there are? No. But they do try to get out and pre-plan and talk with the presidents of the corporations to try to find out what their problems are.
And Mr. Jeanette, your department would be someone involved in that?
Our department oversees the State Emergency Response Commission. We receive the Tier 2 reports from all over the state. Currently, I think we have about 9,000 facilities that file those reports to the state. The problem is that most of those facilities file paper reports, and they come in and large volumes of paper, and there's no way we have to literally manually enter each one of those documents. We're currently looking at mandating electronic filing into a database, and we've been looking at that for some time. It's just like everything else. There's a cost associated with doing that, and then you have to make it available to people who don't have access to an electronic means to file. So we're looking to work through that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's all the questions. Anybody else have a question, Mr. Webster's? Okay. Okay, so with that, I see we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people in line there. Again, Matt, hold the mic. Because as we found in Congress, if we surrender the mic to a member of the House or especially a member of the Senate, we may never get it back. So with that, again, this is not something we typically do, but again, with the urging of my colleagues up here, and I think that it's a, such important subject matter that we'll give you, I'll give you a minute to, and again, you can submit all the documentation you want to, but again, give you a minute to make a public statement. So with that, introduce yourself, please, and where you're from or who you're with.
Thank you, Chairman Schuster. My name is Maya Nye. I'm the spokesperson for people concerned about chemical safety, but I grew up a mile away from the Institute Chemical Facility. My father worked for Union Carbide for his entire career. My mom worked there. My stepfather worked there. I worked there while I was in college. You know, chemical incidents are actually, they're anything but new to me. And much like water contamination is anything but new to the people of the coal fields of West Virginia and to the fracking fields of West Virginia. I've been through many chemical incidents in my life. And when this incident first happened, my dear friend called me panicked because she hadn't heard about the leak until after it had already entered the drinking water supply and she had just bathed her twin daughters in it. And she was worried about the immediate and long-term health effects of the chemical that she had just unknowingly exposed her children to.
Since we only have 7 people up there, I'm going to give everybody 2 minutes, but we're going to cut it off at 7. So go, you have another minute. Go ahead.
We need peer-reviewed scientific evidence to measure the accuracy of flushing protocols. We need peer-reviewed scientific evidence to tell us what the long-term health effects will be. We need medical monitoring. We've needed it for the last 70 years in this valley. We need to continue water distribution until someone up here is willing to say that the water is safe. We're so glad to have the Chemical Safety Board back here. And while the water intake system should be high priority on the protective should be high on the priority list for protective measures that we need to put in place, I believe that we are short-sighting ourselves if we stop there. I mean, I think that we really need to insist that companies like Freedom invest in updating their aging infrastructure in order to protect not only our water intakes, but to protect the workers, protect community members, and to protect a thriving local economy. We need to mandate the implementation of inherently safer technologies as well and reduce the stockpiles in order to minimize the terrorist threat that is posed by these facilities. And we need to take a good hard look at chemical safety from cradle to grave. So from communities like mine that manufacture through transportation to the application and to the waste disposal, we have to look at that chain. And if we don't, we're really short-sighting ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you can submit all for the record. And again, next person up. Again, we cut off the line with the last gentleman with the flannel shirt and the beard. He's our last one, but we're going to give everybody 2 minutes instead of so... Set the clock at 2, and can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Janet J.T. Thompson, and I appreciate everything I've heard about what you plan to do in the future, and I can appreciate what you went through with Freedom. But my question is this, and we do need an answer now. We were told that the water, if you smelt the water was not safe. I had a little 10-year-old girl tell me the other day that the water stinks. She can smell the smell. They're about probably 1,000 feet from the plant. They still can smell it, and the water stinks when it comes out. So I think what we really want to know in order to restore the confidence is when will we stop smelling the water and when will we hear that the chemical leak is completely stopped? And that will assure us that it's not getting into the water.
Thank you. Would someone care to answer? I think someone's talked a little bit about that. I can't remember who, that there's some smell, but there's...
Chairman, if I might say just one thing to start with. As everybody knows, the odor threshold on this is very, very low. Some of you may remember that a week ago, last Friday, we cut a pipe up there that was just laying in the bottom that no one knew about. And we had odor complaints a mile away from the site. And we took a sample of that material, and it came back at 98 parts per million. Less than 100 parts per million, people were smelling it a mile away. Okay. So it's very easy to smell, as everybody says. And I need to point out that when we do get to work removing the tanks, there will likely be odors again up there. That doesn't mean it's going to be in the water. That means that we have exposed some of it to the air, and it's going to smell. But that is... I understand what the lady's talking about. You can smell it at extremely low levels.
But confirmed that the leak has stopped. You're confident that the leak is? Okay. And Mr. McIntyre, you want to?
Let me talk to the drinking water and the odor in the drinking water again. We've tried to be as consistent as we can, but it's fact-based information that you can smell MCHM in water below the protective health limit. Just because you can smell something doesn't mean it's not safe. In fact, since the 17th, we've been out flushing and testing the system, and there has been no result that's close to the protective health limit since the 17th of January.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next person, thank you for the question. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Sue Davis. I've lived in this valley for 71 years. And the chemicals have interrupted my life and my well-being again, as they have over the last 71 years. Mr. McIntyre, the money that you offer us won't pay for the gas that I've used to get to the doctor. Also, why do you suppose all of our stores are always filled with every kind of drinking water possible? Jugs, small bottles. We simply don't have that much confidence in your water system to begin with. So it's going to be a long time before you restore faith in it again, and you will never have mine. The lady from the poison control, I think she's poison control.
We don't have anybody here from the CDC.
The lady in the...
Dr. Tierney, yes, the health officer.
Doctor, yes. I appreciate your comments, but you're not considering the people who haven't gone to the hospitals and the doctors. I went to one of your medical facilities. My cousin insisted I go because I've been sick. And when I got there, I said, my cousin made me come. I don't know what you can do, but we thought maybe you might want some documentation or some numbers. She said, we're not interested in any numbers. We're not keeping any. Representative Congresswoman Capito, I didn't care for the slip of tongue when you referred to the myth any more than I referred to what you said on the TV about the shelves being stocked. We could go out and buy them, buy the water. I thought that was poor taste, but I'm glad that you apologized for that as well. That bothers me. It still bothers me.
Well, thank you very much. Your time's run out here. We want to get to the other folks.
I would like to say one thing, if I might.
I'll give you 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. We're talking about the water in the pipes. When I came outside the other day, the water from the flooding in the yard was so bad with the licorice smell. This has been the last rain we have 2 or 3 days ago. And it has burned me so tremendously and caused my breathing to be so bad. Why should the water be on our land when it rains? And I did keep some of the water. If anybody's interested, I know it couldn't be scientifically accepted, but I would like to know.
Thank you very much for your comments. Next, please.
Hello, I'm Angie Ross, the Executive Director of the West Virginia Rivers Coalition, and we, shortly after the spill, worked with a team of independent science and policy experts to issue a report that looked at the comprehensive failings on every level of government, the information gaps, and recommended policy recommendations. I'll make sure that's submitted as part of the written record. But I'd urge this committee to look at two things. One was a statement that our DEP secretary has made in the press, and I noticed he is not here as a member of the panel to answer to this. But he said that this incident could have been prevented or minimized with the regulations we currently have in place. It just didn't click with anyone that this was a concern. So I would like to for the committee to ask him more what he means about this could have been prevented with the current regulations and why it didn't click as a concern before we start rushing to legislate. The other thing we're concerned about is the Charleston intake. The Bureau of Public Health let us know that through their source water assessment report, we have 51 potential significant contaminant sources to this intake. Freedom Industries is one of them. We're wondering, what about the other 50? This is not just about one leaky tank. It's not just about above-ground storage tanks that are a threat to our water supplies, so we need to take a comprehensive look. In Huntington, there are 424 potential significant contaminant sources. So please, let's not have a narrow view and just look at tanks, but look at all of the threats to our water sources that we face in West Virginia and around the nation.
Thank you, and I feel confident in talking with Senator Manchin and both Representatives Rahal and Capito. They're asking those types of questions right now that you've asked for. Next, please introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. I appreciate everybody's interest here today. I have some observations, not blames. One of my observations is my name is Jim Carruthers. I'm the mayor of the town of Poca, and the flushing procedure. We're flushing our homes with contaminated water. All we're doing is bringing dirty water in and dumping it out. It's being flushed through the spigot. It's not being flushed through the mains. It's not being flushed through the hydrants. It's being flushed through the spigots and an unusual number of breaks. And I think that people have a misconception. They think they're doing themselves a lot of good when they run the water through, but if we're still pulling dirty water in through the main system needs to be purged, then we purge the houses. Secondly, the beginning of this project was a cluster. I think everybody knows that. The notification was great by the media, and the media did a great job. For those of us or those of you who sit with a beep-beep in your hand and are listening or watching a computer, a television, or a cell phone at all times, which I see through this group, almost everybody does, which is a few of us that go out and do things. We don't know about it. These two counties just put in a fabulous system last year, an emergency siren system with a voice override. It could have been activated instantly, and everybody could have been told, do not use the water. The guy walking down the street, the kids playing in the yards, there's 21 of these spread throughout our counties. It wouldn't have gotten everybody, but between this notification and the phone system and the media, I think a lot of people could have been tipped off early and not have potentially taken in some of these hazardous materials. I think all in all, we're very lucky that we haven't had major medical problems. I'm a resident of Putnam County, and we used to use the nitro water. You talk about smell. Whatever fish died upriver, we smelled it that night. It's come a long ways. It's far better than it was, but it's got ways to go. But I do appreciate your turnout. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. And with that, the next gentleman, please introduce yourself.
James Gilpin, living in Cross Lanes, West Virginia. First and most first, Freedom Industry is not who I pay my water bill to. I pay my water bill to West Virginia American Water. They should have protected us in all results of anything. And first and most is I have worked in chemical plants. I've dealt with chemicals. There's a PPE standard that should have been done. Does anybody have the PPE standard that we should have had when we flushed our water? I've got a spot on my leg that I got the first day I stepped into water, and I won't shower or bath in it right now. But my question is what are we doing? Not for the past is what we've done. We can understand what happened in the past. What are we doing in the future? Why cannot one of y'all stand up and say our water is drinkable? Why can't all of y'all not say that it's okay to bath in our water, that we're not going to have no long-term?
Well, and I think that question has been asked and answered a couple of times. There's some.
But no one wants to answer that question.
Well, the experts have said there's some concerns about, you know, there hasn't been enough testing. As I pointed out.
Their biggest fear is a lawsuit.
My concern is people are afraid there are going to be a lawsuit.
West Virginia. And I think that if our government can't supply us with good drinking water, then something needs to be done.
Well, that's what we're holding this hearing here for today, to take it back to Washington. You've got three very able and capable representatives of West Virginia.
And to bring it up, he asked, was this a major disaster in our state? Yes, it is a major disaster. If our babies cannot drink water and our elderly cannot drink water, and my mother, she's on a respirator, and to purify the water in our homes, then what is there?
Well, again, that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of it. So thank you for your comments. And next gentleman, would you please step to the mic and...
Yes, my name is Chuck Reynolds. I live in Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia. That's Putnam County, 35 miles to the west. And, you know, we were told to flush our water system, you know, as instructed. I flushed the water system, and it still had the smell. I flushed it twice, and it was still there. And now my wife and I, of course, like everybody else, they have water distribution centers. My wife has to go to the town of Hurricane, and both her parents are real elderly, and we have to carry but get water off of them because the town of Hurricane's smart enough to have their own water system. They're not hooked to West Virginia water. And I'm going to give you a standpoint from this. I'm a maintenance person, okay? I worked for the state of West Virginia for 23 years, okay? And you get chemical in a hot water tank, it's very hard to get out. You're testing the cold water, you need to test the hot water. Not only that, the reason people are letting their water run is because they don't want their pipes to freeze. They're not using the water. I'm not drinking the water. My wife is not drinking the water. None of my neighbors trust the water. And, you know, I don't put all the blame on the water company. We need laws to enforce. We need to enforce these laws when you make them and prosecute these people that are responsible for polluting our water and polluting our air. And the main thing, I was told by a very strong source, by one of the workers who worked for Freedom Industry, that he found a leak in a tank. Instead of reporting it, he was told to take a paintbrush and paint it. So that's what you're dealing with.
Well, I'm sure those investigations are going on. Thank you for your comments. Those are kind of investigations I'm sure will be investigated. I want to thank everybody for participating, especially our witnesses today. Thank you very much for helping us understand and educating us on what's happened here. As mentioned, Mr. Rahal made the motion to keep the record open for 30 days. So anybody that wishes to submit testimony or information to the committee has 30 days to do that. And again, I'm confident that you folks are represented by Senator Manchin, Senator Rockefeller, Representative Rahal and Capito, four very able representatives for the people of West Virginia. Your voice will be heard not only in the committee but in the Congress. So again, I thank everybody for being here. And with that, the committee stands adjourned.
You've been listening to a field hearing by the U.S. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Questions and answers about the Elk River chemical spill. In testimony, we heard a review of the events of January 9th, the role agencies took to warn residents to try to remediate the situation, the reasons for not turning off the water completely, and a reluctance to say the water is safe to drink. We'll have coverage throughout the day today, a full report tonight on the legislature today at 6:30 on West Virginia PBS and West Virginia Public Radio, and tomorrow on West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees reporting for West Virginia Public Radio.